What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here?
Broadcasting live from the greatest city in the world.
Austin, Texas, baby.
It's Bucky and Aaron.
You guys want to play some twos?
You know what? Actually, we're kind of in the middle of a conversation.
B&E.
What's B&E?
Bucky Godbolt, Aaron Hogan on the Horn, 104.9 AM 1260 and hornfm.com with the Longhorns Play and Austin Talks Sports.
It is a Wednesday on B&E. Boy, big conversations today. World Series in the books. Dodgers, the champions of baseball for 2020. After seven straight postseason appearances, two into the World Series, they finally finish the deal. And it did come with some controversy, which we'll talk about, but they were certainly the best team start to finish. Had the best record in the regular season for 60 games. And as we said, became the third team in baseball history to lead all of baseball in ERA, runs scored, home runs. They were great in all phases, and it showed up over the course of the postseason. And keep in mind, the Dodgers were down 3-1 to the Atlanta Braves. When, boy, people like Craig Way and all the Dodger fans were like, oh my gosh, here we go again. This is supposed to be our year, and here comes this baby Braves group that's about to take it from us. And give L.A. credit. They showed some real grit. Three straight victories on a Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, successive days in the NLCS to get here. And it took all parties to do so. Mookie Betts making unbelievable defensive plays. Corey Seager hitting home runs. Like Cody Bellinger with the big home runs. And then in the World Series, they were the superior side as well, winning in six games. But it will forever be known, the Game 6, as Kevin Cash's decision to remove Blake Snell. That's always going to be the lead. It's not even about what the Dodgers did. It's about, you know, we gave the number earlier, Buck, that the last pitcher that had struck out nine batters through his first four innings in a World Series game was Sandy Koufax. And that was way back in the 60s, and Sandy Koufax went on to throw a complete game, 15 strikeout performance and a win. In 2020, Blake Snell was removed in the sixth inning after just 70 pitches. He had struck out nine, gave up a one-out single, kind of a harmless little, you know, soft liner, and he's out. And analytics told him so, and the rest is history. Nick Anderson gave up the lead, and the Rays never recovered from that.
Yeah, I hope he'd be one of those managers that would say, if I could do it all over again, he wouldn't go back and say, I'd do it the same way. I hope he would say, you know what, I should have had a better feel for that situation. When people go back and say, I would do it the same way, I always look at him and go, no, you wouldn't. You really wouldn't do that way if you could.
I mean, we saw the Astros do it 1 year ago with A.J. Hinch. Look, the analytics work, right? I mean, the money ball phenomenon, the reason it's been so embraced is that it works. I mean, over the course of a long season, going by the numbers typically pays off. It does, and it's been shown to that, you know, the analytics are huge, and the teams that have followed them and embraced them are the best teams. But at the same time, in a game that decides your season, you shouldn't have let analytics decide it. This is to the point of feel. Like,
right.
Who's my best pitcher on my whole staff?
The guy who's on the mound.
Yeah, Blake Snell's a Cy Young winner. Is he pitching really well? Yes. Like, who's got the best stuff on my staff?
Yeah, analytics says the third time around, they're going to start knocking him around.
That's right. But I think you got to give him a little longer leash than that. I mean, a one-out single. But yes, I mean, the analytics said that the third time through a lineup, Blake Snell's the OPS continues to rise, and here he is about to go through the lineup for the third time. So you go get a fresh arm. But you never know what that fresh arm has. That's the one thing about going to your bullpen. It's always a risk, even if they've been good.
Especially in the sixth inning.
And if you know a guy is in a groove and he's, you know, he got a game plan. He's, by the way, Blake Snell has faced this lineup already earlier in this series.
He struck them all out.
I'm not talking about in this game. He's
faced
them earlier in the series.
That's right.
He's like he understands this group. He's got a game plan. He's executing it with his catcher. He's punched out nine dudes through five innings.
He had Mookie just guessing.
Yeah. Well, I guess to that point, I like the analytics big picture, but in a singular moment, Kevin Cash, who gives you the best chance to get through this inning? I would argue it's Blake Snell with his best stuff because he hasn't had his best stuff every time out in this postseason, but in this particular game he did, and it was only 70-some pitches. I think that's a no-brainer. But, you know, last year A.J. Hinch did the same thing, pulled Zach Greinke with clinging to a 1-0 lead in Game 7. I mean, this was it. This was Game 7. You were a few outs away from winning a championship. And you went to Will Smith, what's his name? The Astro reliever that coughed it up. Will, Gosh dang it. Howie Kendrick hits the home run off the flagpole down the right field line, and you know, you go to your bullpen and take out your starter. Zach Greinke's still mad about that a year later for the Astros.
And talks about it.
I mean, at some point you let your starter finish. Why is your starter, especially if he's dealing? If he's laboring, if he's struggling, putting runners on base, that's
right.
All a different conversation. If you're kind of in a rocking chair, you let him sit and fire. But that was the story. And then after that, once the Dodgers took the lead and then it was kind of a matter of time, the story became Justin Turner and his mysterious disappearance from the game in the eighth inning, that Justin Turner's all of a sudden out of the game without an explanation. It was announced after the game was over that Justin Turner had tested positive for COVID-19 and was removed from the game during the game, which led to just rampant speculation of how the hell does that happen. And then, of course, after the game, after the initial celebration, there was Justin Turner back on the field celebrating with his teammates without a mask, holding the World Series trophy, posing for the team picture. And that, of course, has led to the bigger conversation outside of baseball this morning.
Yeah, and the big conversation is, why did it
Will
take
Harris, I'm sorry, thank you.
Why would that take so long? I mean, that this is such an important player, such an important game. I mean, you're in the World Series. Why can I go around the corner and get a test done in 15 minutes, rapid testing?
Yeah, let's
get that. To make sure of what? He tested positive. Okay, so you have an inkling that something's going on. Give me another test. I need this test here in about 2 hours. Why would it take you a whole 24 hours?
Well, this is a fair
hours?
Question for baseball, right? I mean, let's hear from Ken Rosenthal of Fox on this when Zay gets back. Zay, can we play here Ken Rosenthal? He was the first to report on this. Of course, this was a Fox broadcast. He's their baseball insider. So immediately Joe Buck and John Smoltz. By the way, John Smoltz is phenomenal. I think he's the best analyst in any sport. And I love baseball, so maybe that's why. But, I mean, Tony Romo in football. But, gosh, John Smoltz is so good. But they threw it to Ken Rosenthal to say, hey, what the heck's going on here with this Justin Turner deal?
Why he went on the field when he is positive, that is an excellent question. And my understanding from various people is that he was told not to go on the field or asked not to go on the field. He insisted upon it. The Dodgers insisted upon it. And that is why he was out there. And at one point, he did have his mask off. He was mostly masked, but there was a point in the picture when he did take it off.
So that's Ken Rosenthal. He was asked, his insider report, he was asked not to come back to the field. Baseball security asked him, and he refused, which could lead to a suspension for Justin Turner or a fine. And then here's Jeff Passan of ESPN, their insider, on the, to your question, why did it take so long? How did it get to the eighth inning before he was taken out?
For 59 days, Major League Baseball had not had a positive test by a player. And in the second inning of Game 6 of what ultimately ended up being the final baseball game in 2020, Major League Baseball got a call from the lab that runs the test for it, saying that Justin Turner had inconclusive results from yesterday's tests, and the tests from today had just arrived. Once those tests were run, Turner's test came back positive. Major League Baseball called the Los Angeles Dodgers. Word came down to the dugout to get Justin Turner out of the game now, and by the eighth inning, he was pulled from the game. This evening, they are going to, as they get back to the hotel, run 30-minute rapid PCR tests in hopes of getting a better sense of whether this was spread at all, though, as we know, it may not come back for another few days as to whether it was just Justin Turner or more people on the world champion Los Angeles Dodgers.
And of course,
said as it were, it took, you know,
the timeline is what's going to lead people to the conspiracy theories, right? They were talking about Monday's test that just came back positive. I mean, can you see the picture here with the lab guy at the lab? Oh, we got a positive. Let's call the dugout.
No. Hold on to that.
Well, yeah. How does the Monday test not get revealed to baseball until Wednesday in the second inning, which is about 8 o'clock in the evening?
And he doesn't come out of the game until when?
Until the eighth. Because baseball says, or at least Jeff Passan, who he knows talking to baseball folks, that, okay, once the first test came back positive at 8 o'clock on Wednesday, which is 48 hours later, that, wait a second, let's go test his Tuesday sample, too. Oh, that came back positive, too.
Oh, man.
Well, what's taking so long? Why did you wait 2 days to test Monday's results or get Monday's results?
I believe they'll be punished for that. The other thing is the fact that when he went on the field without his mask on, that is on the Dodgers. From that point on, that's on the Dodgers and the Dodgers family because they knew he was out there. They knew he had already tested positive. He didn't have a mask on, and that's up to them. If they possibly want to risk getting COVID-19, that was on them. That's not That's their own personal.
Yeah, they knew.
That's their own personal business from that point on.
Yeah, so there's a baseball angle to it. It was, when did baseball know what?
Right.
And was this about, let's see if we can get through this game, get the Dodgers to win, get this thing over with.
Because we don't want to delay this stuff.
Because the worst case is we got to shut this thing down, and we can't play Game 7 if the Rays win because we have a COVID outbreak. And we've seen that in baseball this year with Miami Marlins right. and some other teams. Once one tests positive, typically there's multiple, and we see that trickle out. It's all with the Tennessee Titans in the NFL. Once there's one, there's many. And that's probably going to be the case in L.A. But guess what? Now the season's over. And they just won't be able to go to their parade.
Here's your fine. That's
yeah.
it.
And did baseball know something as of Tuesday or even Monday? And let
I got to believe they knew something. Because, I got to believe, and they didn't want to delay this. They didn't. They didn't want to wait another week or so.
They know the ramp. They know the protocols. And now you're to the World Series. That's why they moved this game to the bubble environment to prevent just this scenario. But if it does come back positive, the minute Justin Turner's positive, even if it's Monday or Tuesday, well, he can't play. Well, no, anybody he's come in contact with can't play.
Right.
So essentially, you're in a spot where you got to shut the World Series down.
And they don't want to do that.
No.
It's baseball. Baseball does these things all the time.
Yeah.
Since they started playing baseball, there's always some kind of scandal and weird deal going on. So that shouldn't surprise anybody.
And at the end of the day, who's going to investigate that?
Baseball? What does that mean?
Oh, nothing to see here.
Yeah, of course.
Unless some outside entity comes in, you know, there's no crime committed here.
They're going to get a huge fine. They're going to pay it, and the parade will go on someday, and they'll be world champs with the trophy.
Call for something. Say the Rays can say, wait a second, Dodgers, we were all positive or clear over here. Did you play a negative player?
Wait a minute. You can't do that. Don't be talking about your team.
Rays?
Yeah.
Well, would be the team that would object because they could argue that, wait a second, Justin Turner shouldn't even been playing on Tuesday or Wednesday.
Right.
And what are we doing here? This is one of their key guys. Is that did you guys tip the scales of justice on this thing a little bit over
did
there, Major League Baseball?
Did you know that?
What did you know when Major League Baseball? But you know, much like we found out in these situations, they won't answer that question. But, it leads to the fact that the season's over is what baseball wanted. I mean, the worst-case scenario would have been Dodgers losing last night when this is revealed. Now you can't play Game 7. Who knows when you'll be able to?
For one game. You have to shut it down for a week?
Possibly.
Wow.
Which, they're playing in a dome, in a roof stadium, so they could have. But who knows how? I mean, we've seen this play out in other sports. How long does it take to get through all of this tracing and positives and Justin Turner? And no, it was this conversation, because by the weekend this started, conversation's over.
Oh yeah,
it's done. Unless the Rays a stink, and because baseball's not going to investigate itself, and there's not the FBI's not rolling in here to investigate the LA Dodgers and Major League Baseball. I don't believe now Congress could get involved. And Congress, you never always want that's what we
Congress?
Want is our government
involved in the baseball game. No,
let's get to the bottom of this. Dang it.
Yeah, they'll get fined for that, and that'll be about it. And then we'll go on, and we'll just remember them as the world champions.
Okay.
And Roberts and Turner and everybody else will get their ring, and we'll move right along. And someone will say, do you remember this time in baseball when this happened?
Well, this says, somebody texted me and said, you realize today is Tuesday, or Wednesday, yesterday was a Tuesday. Well, you just heard Jeff Passan say it. And Dave Roberts, the manager, said it afterwards, that the result of JT's test from Monday came back in the second inning of Game 6 tonight. So the Monday test came back on Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
Why? And then once they got the Monday test on the second inning, 2 days later, they then tested his Tuesday sample, which they found to be positive as well. So now there were back-to-back positive tests. But the question of the timeline is, well, why does Monday's test not come back until Wednesday?
But are we all thinking that all of these, like, nothing happened in football, nobody tested positive?
Of course not.
I mean, is that really possible? Was this possible throughout the whole football season so far? Or one guy in baseball just now, finally?
You put the protocols in place for a reason, and the protocols, if they're there, have to then be followed.
I mean, correct.
To the T, or else you're not. Go to the protocols? That doesn't make a lot of sense. So that's going to be the question. But again, who's going to investigate it? This thing will be gone by Thursday or Friday.
Absolutely.
And I think there'll be some that will hold it. But there's not. We got a national election coming up in 6 days.
No.
There are bigger issues. But again, the question is out there. And the only party that could be aggrieved on this would be the Rays. The Rays could raise a stink. Raise an argument, and that could lead to something further and beyond. But
they got their own problems with what the coach did.
Kevin Cash.
Yeah, what he did, more so than what's going on there.
Well, at this point, I think baseball's just happy the season's over.
For
they
sure.
got through it.
They got it done.
Let's go back to June when the players' union and the owners were fighting over money and dollars and games, and it was looking really ugly. Would they even be able to play a season?
Everybody got a chance to get into the playoffs. I thought it was still kind of cool. I felt bad that fans couldn't go and all that stuff, but I think the way they did it, and there were teams that got opportunities to make it to the playoffs, got their opportunity.
Gotcha. So, okay, that's correct. So Monday's test came back Tuesday evening, so 24 hours later.
Mm-hmm.
But that's still a fair question, right?
Not when you can get it back in 15 minutes
right,
and get here in places.
That's what I'm saying. So that's what I'm asking for, and you people are correcting me are right. I mean, today is Wednesday. But so if the Monday test doesn't come back until Tuesday inning number two, and then they were able to test the Tuesday sample within a quick amount of time, why wasn't that done on Tuesday before the game becomes the easy question. Yes, there's not a 48-hour gap. There's a 24-hour gap
okay. That
would have to be answered for. So how is Monday's test not revealed until early stages of game six?
Well, simply, how can something come down in the second inning and he's not out of the game until the...
Because they went back and tested his Tuesday sample, which also leads to the question of why didn't they test his Tuesday sample sooner? What's the point of taking a test on Tuesday that doesn't get tested, that doesn't get looked at? Because by the way that reads, or the way that you hear that, if the sample, if the lab hadn't alerted baseball in the second inning last
yes.
night, they wouldn't have even tested the Tuesday sample. But that's when they went and got his Tuesday sample and tested it and found it was also negative, or positive, I should say, which leads to the gap.
But yeah, and the other stuff is just, that's up to the baseball team itself. That's up to the people that are on the field with him. That know he's there with his family, hugging people without his mask. That's up to them. That's their own, what they want. They let him back in there to do that. And that's with the Dodgers. That's
sure.
their responsibility.
And it's possible under investigation the protocols were followed. And this is just the way they've been doing it all along. And this is
correct.
The way it went. And this is the timeline of the lab and how they're doing it. And then it becomes, okay, baseball's clean. And then on the other side, it becomes why Justin Turner was back on the field after the game. Then, as you say,
that's a Dodgers deal.
Conversation.
Correct.
Yeah.
That's nobody's business. That's what they said they wanted to do.
But
they wanted him to be a part
of
it.
Baseball security, as Ken Rosenthal said, no, you can't go. And he said, screw you. I'm going to celebrate with my team. There could be a fine. And keep in mind, Justin Turner is a free agent this offseason.
Okay, somebody's paying from the Dodgers will pay the fine. Give me my trophy. That's right.
And they earned it. They certainly did. And Kevin Cash helped with his decision with Blake Snell, which is still head scratching.
It's amazing.
Moment. You would just like to, I mean, this is, go back to that great Augie Garrido statement. Hey, be a hero. You know, this is what Blake Snell, that's why he was so mad. Hey, I want to go be a hero. I want to go, let me get out of this. Let me pitch through this. And I want to carry my team to a huge Game 6 victory. And was not given that opportunity. And, you know, he didn't throw his manager under the bus by any stretch. He backed Kevin Cash. He did say this is what we've always done.
And he said he's a good manager.
But I think, as we talked about last year, analytics are good, but then in a moment, to your point as a coach, Buck, feel's got to come in on that.
Yeah, you got to feel that. I don't even think that was that hard. It didn't look like it was that hard. It was a guy on first. It wasn't threatening any runs. He already had one out when they came to yank him out, and I'm thinking they're just going to go talk to him, right? They're not taking him out of the game. There's one out.
Right.
He could hit it. The way he was pitching, guys would hit into a duck. First of all, they couldn't even hit him. They were barely able to hit that dude last night.
Sandy Koufax for four innings.
Jeez.
And into the sixth, he's still cruising, and he gives up a one-out kind of lazy single, and that's it. And that you can understand.
Manager will tell you, if I had a chance to do it again, I would do it that way again.
I don't know. Do you think A.J. Hinch would do it over again?
No, hell no.
Because remember, A.J. Hinch's decision was, do I go, okay, pulling Zach Greinke is one thing, because that was in the seventh inning with a 1-0 lead. But he did have Garrett Cole available, remember? And so if you're going to go to a pitcher and you're going to pull this guy, why go get Will Harris, who had actually been pretty good in the playoffs, and remember Howie Kendrick hit a really nice pitch.
And you see who these guys went to. A guy that's given up a run for the last seven in a row.
Well, that's the other side of Kevin Cash. I mean, Nick Anderson, after last night, he's given up a run in seven straight appearances. This isn't actually Fort Knox that you're going to in the bullpen. But the what-ifs are always what makes sports great, and mm-hmm. that one will be there forever, just like the what-if with the Astros a year ago with Zach Greinke, and the Dodgers are a rightful champion.
What if Tom Herman wins Saturday? What if?
What if? He'll be 4-2 and been right in the thick of the – if Tom Herman wins Saturday and finds a way to win a close game and beat Oklahoma State, you can start using the C word again.
Oh, boy. Really?
Sure. I will allow that.
This is good. This is
the
good.
The championship word can then be used surrounding the Texas Longhorn conversation if they win Saturday.
All right, let's just find a way that other group from Oklahoma doesn't find a way back in as they're getting better, even though they're playing bad teams.
Yeah, they did to TCU what Texas should have done to TCU.
Oh, they just, guys, wide open.
And Spencer Rattler's getting better, and that's the concern, because you got to face Spencer Rattler for the next several years, and you had a chance to beat him as he was benched.
And by the way, guess what? He got well on you over the next couple of years. Think about that.
Well, got well because a lesson was taught, and he was benched. He wasn't taking care of the football, might have been a little nervous or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Settled down, led his team to a win, and then they had a bye week, and just like Texas did. And you can tell that during the off week, they got better, and they went out and spanked TCU, and you know, they feel like they're ascending now and putting themselves on. Texas can make that same argument if they're to beat Oklahoma State on Saturday.
That's right.
And get themselves back into the conversation.
Now we're talking championships.
Not till then. Yeah. Not till then. The champions are the LA Dodgers. So you have the Dodgers and we've awarded four championships this month in the major American sports. The Lakers, the Seattle Storm.
That's soccer.
The Tampa.
Is that MLS?
Tampa Seattle, would be NHL.
Seattle Storm.
Tampa Bay Lightning in the NHL now the LA Dodgers.
So what's that Stormtrooper group?
Hey, by the way, do you know who won the baseball championship 1988? Dodgers. Won the NBA championship 88? Lakers. You know who won the college football national championship that same year? The last time the Lakers and Dodgers both won a championship
USC?
In the same calendar year?
USC.
Notre Dame. The Fighting Irish of Notre Dame. I'm just pointing it out.
How about the Storm? Were they in it then? Oh, no.
The Seattle Superstorm?
They weren't there then.
Oh, man. They've won like five championships, the Seattle team.
Of course
team.
They have.
Yeah, we'll be back. We roll on. Thanks for the correction on the Wednesday. Today is Wednesday.
It is.
Tests were Monday. I get it. But there's still a gap for me. But maybe I'm wrong. We will continue to debate the conversations of the day. It's B&E on the Horn.
B&E.
Appreciate the conversation on the Specs text line and with you here on the show of the people every day and certainly on this Wednesday. Somebody reminded us, hey, don't forget Magic Johnson is an MLB and NBA championship, part owner of the Dodgers, had a hand in bringing LeBron to the Lakers. No, Magic tweeted that last night. Big Magic Johnson.
Well, he let you know.
He's got 10 rings now. Because not only is that, he's also a part owner of the WNBA's LA Sparks.
The Sparks. Let me see how many games I watched of that this year.
Forever, but they didn't win the championship this year. But so Magic, Big Magic Johnson has plenty of jewelry.
Zay doesn't like me talking about the WNBA. He doesn't like that. He wants me to be.
He'd like you to be a fan more than you are.
All of basketball.
Because cool, Isaiah is a basketball fan. He likes basketball.
I know, but
any kind.
You know what I like? Good basketball.
Oh, man.
Oh, did I say it? I'm sorry. Did I just say that?
You can't be hating on basketball, dog.
You know what? They have come a long way. And in the sport of basketball, I will truly say that over the last 20 years.
Seattle team's an all-time dynasty. Yes. All right, so we've got baseball on the brain, basketball for sure with Magic Johnson. That runs basketball on the brain. But I'll tell you what is on the brain, Buck, is the football, which we'll get back to. But the live music capital of the world, we're privileged every Wednesday to talk to the general manager, the longest-running worldwide music television show of all time. He is our friend Tom Gimbel from the Austin City Limits television show and ACL TV. And, of course, the Austin community lost a legend this week with the passing of Jerry Jeff Walker. Tom, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
Doing well, Tom. And I know that one hit the ACL team pretty hard to have Jerry Jeff and what he's meant to Texas music. And you'd argue without Jerry Jeff, there's not the rise of what we've seen with Texas country music.
Well, you know, there might not be an Austin City Limits if it wasn't for Jerry Jeff Walker and just that whole movement. He was first. Jerry Jeff came to town before Willie. You know, he was one of the first guys to come down here and start playing, you know, that style of music, that irreverent country music and part of the Armadillo World Headquarters. And then certainly his song London Homesick Blues, Home with the Armadillo, which was written by Gary P. Nunn of the Los Gonzo Band, but made famous by Jerry Jeff. It was Austin City Limits' unofficial theme song for decades, you know. So he is just such a part of the fabric of our community and certainly such a part of the history of Austin City Limits. So we lost a legend.
No question about that. And a great great Austinite as well. And as we said, the family, I'm sure there'll be plans for a memorial and a funeral coming for Jerry Jeff. But a big part of ACL, and as Tom Gimbel says, maybe no ACL and its growth without that. And as Willie Nelson and Daryl Royal helped to push the envelope on that as well. And Buck, I'll tell you this, I've heard many a story about Jerry Jeff and Willie and Coach Royal out in Onion Creek, my neighborhood.
Wow.
Living back in the 70s, having a good old time.
Coach Royal had his home was right there at that par three.
Yeah, no, par four. Narrow par four.
Yeah. Across the river there?
Yeah, it would be on the original course number 12.
Sorry, across
number
the 12. Creek.
Yeah, across Onion Creek.
Yes.
Up elevate overlooking Onion Creek. Yeah,
yep.
Many a good time, I would imagine. It's song written
bet.
In that home right on La Costa in Onion Creek, Texas, which is pretty cool. Tom, before we get to your music picks, I want to mention, because we're going to have a very special guest come on with us. This segment is now sponsored by Lag Shot Golf, which we're excited about. If you're a golfer and you want to get better at golf, this is a great training tool, which we're going to learn about. But we're excited to talk to Gary here coming up. But tell us your experience with the Lag Shot piece of equipment that we're going to talk to Gary about.
Well, I mean, you know my game. It is a work in progress. But I can't have a coach. I can't have Butch Harmon out there at the driving range with me telling me whether I'm doing something right or wrong. You just have to feel it, and you can tell by your ball flight. You can tell by the result. But when you feel it, you feel what a good golf shot, what a good golf swing feels like. That's when you get better. And that's what the Lag Shot does. It kind of forces you to feel it. It's got a heavier head that you're going to feel your club position. It's got a flexible shaft, a rubbery shaft that forces you to slow down your swing, get that plane where it needs to be. And so it just corrects you as you swing the club. It's challenging. I will tell you that. You swing this thing 12, 15 times, you're going to struggle to hit the ball straight. But once you feel it, once the club helps you get that move, you're going to start hitting the ball really well. And then you pick up your regular club and you find that you've just got a different swing. You're going to be hitting it better on the range. You're going to be hitting it better when you go out and you play with your buddies. It's really a one-of-a-kind training aid in that you're actually hitting golf balls, seeing a result, and most importantly, you're feeling what it's like to hit a good golf shot.
Very cool. And we're talking to Gary here coming up, and Gary's going to give one away to one of you lucky listeners out there, one of these Lag Shot swing trainers, and we'll learn from him. But Tom, give us your favorite few shows this week for folks. We know live music starting to trickle back into the mainstream and on the scene, but you also give us a couple of good streaming shows that people can watch from their home or in their home theater. What are your favorite few shows starting tonight?
Tonight, down at Greenhall has been back in business for a while, which is great. It's such a legendary Texas honky-tonk, great live music history from Greenhall. So Eli Young Band, great band, is going to be playing tonight. They're originally from Denton, out of the University of North Texas. Great music program up there. So Eli Young Band tonight, 8 p.m. at Greenhall. And then tomorrow night, the Blues on the Green series returns. This is typically something that happens in Zilker Park every summer. It's a great Austin tradition. Unfortunately, we weren't able to get together in person this summer, but they're reconfiguring the show. People are able to win tickets to go and see these tapings at Stubbs. Is outdoors at Stubbs, kind of a smaller venue than Zilker Park, obviously. But we can watch. If you don't win tickets, you can watch for free. Thursday night, 8 p.m. It's going to be on YouTube this week, featuring Gina Chavez and Kalu and the Electric Joint. So a great double bill of two of Austin's kind of rising stars in the music world, Kalu and the Electric Joint and Gina Chavez. Blues on the Green, 8 p.m. on Thursday. That's on YouTube. And then a couple more I'll recommend on Friday night. You know, we lost Eddie Van Halen recently. And the Empire Control Room has put together a pretty cool show. It's a Halloween 80s rock party tributing Eddie Van Halen. So that is pretty cool. It features members of Vallejo and Black Heart Saints and special guest Robert Wagner. I guess they'll be doing Van Halen music, but probably also some 80s rock covers at Empire Control Room. So that's a live show. That's not something that's streamed. You buy tickets and head down there. Also that same night, Randy Rogers is going to be at Green Hall, 8 p.m. Really good show, of course. Randy Rogers, one of, you know, Texas country's stars right now. Green Hall, can't beat that with our friend Randy Rogers. And then, you know, some more live streams happening. Animal Collective, a really good band. They're playing 8 p.m. On Saturday. And, you know, some of our local shows that have been going on, the DJ Mel Saturday night dance party. I love the one on Monday nights, not at Don's Depot, with Chris Gage. Chris Gage, you know, has that residency at Don's Depot. And it looks like Don's Depot has received some good support from the community. And from what I hear, they're going to be hanging around for hopefully decades longer. It's terrible to see these institutions of Austin music being threatened. And certainly Don's Depot, everybody's been to Don's Depot and has a good memory there. So hopefully people can continue to support, whether it's through buying tickets to live streaming shows or just charitable donations, whatever we can do to keep our great live music capital venues in business is important. And I also want to point out a couple things that are outside the world of you know, live streaming shows, but two great documentaries that are happening. If you're a music fan, the Pogues' Shane McGowan. If you don't know who Shane McGowan is, he's kind of one of the legendary bad boys of music. The Pogues, a famous Irish band, and Shane McGowan, kind of a famous drinker. And that's putting it lightly. He would give Wade Boggs a run for his money. So Johnny Depp co-produced this, and it's a really riveting documentary on Shane McGowan. And then Bruce Springsteen just released a new record called Letter to You, and Apple documented the whole making of this film. This is the first new album with the E Street Band in many years. So it is a deeper look into this album, and you get to see the recording process, and then they kind of play some of the songs for you live. But if you have an Apple subscription, you can check out the Bruce Springsteen Letter to You documentary. And of course, that album is available on all the streaming services and in record stores like our own Waterloo Records here in town. You can pick it up on vinyl if that's your thing.
Bruce Springsteen with new music here on the Live Music Update. He is Tom Gimbel, the general manager of the Austin City Limits television show. And let's bring to the conversation Gary Guerrero. He's with Lagshot Golf, and they've jumped on to sponsor this segment every Wednesday at 9:30. Gary, we appreciate you doing that, and how are you?
Hey, guys.
Hey, Gary.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for joining us, man.
Hey, tell us about Lagshot. Yeah, I mean, I'm watching these videos, and I'm an avid golfer. Buck is, too, and I know a lot of our audience are. And as Tom described, I mean, this is a training tool that you can actually use on the range. A lot of training tools you kind of use, you know, not hitting balls. This is a one-of-a-kind thing that it says here, with 12 swings, can change your swing. Talk about the Lagshot product and why it works.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, geez, Tom did such a good job describing the club and what it does for you. I think we need to get him on as our new spokesman, maybe.
Happy to do it. I'm an evangelist. I believe in that thing.
Well, you can tell you're passionate about it, and you can tell you use it, and it's you know, becoming a part of your game. So it's awesome to hear and get feedback. And you know, the company's only 3 months old, so we're still, you know, in the infancy stages and going still through a little of trial and error and tweaking things and trying to optimize them and make them better. So what Lagshot is, basically, you know, what we've seen in this market is the golf training niche is missing the element of being able to hit the ball. Like most all the training aids, you know, they set you up, they get you in the right position, they put your hands in the right slot, they do all these things, but they don't really help you connect the dots in the middle of your golf swing where it matters most when you're out there hitting. You know, you can practice all you want on the range, but, you know, when you get out there and you can't translate that feeling that you are working on at the range to the course, it really doesn't help you. And that's the problem with a lot of training aids today is they don't give you that instant feedback that you can get with the lag shot. And the difference is because you can hit the ball. You know, you really, from a few swings, and in our, on our webpage at the very top, we have a very bold claim. It says, what can just 12 swings with this blue shafted beauty do? And really for the average golfer, that's really the only amount of swings that you're really going to need to get the feels that Tom was describing. You know, when you start taking away with this lag shot, it has a little bit of lag flex in the takeaway, which most golfers instantly snatch the club back. And so if there's golfers out there listening, you know, when they instantly turn and roll their hands to the left, that instantly sets your takeaway, your whole swing is, the sequencing is off. And so you're struggling to get back. So from the very beginning, it creates lag on the takeaway, which keeps your hands in front of you, which keeps your club head in front of you. And when you get to the top, Tom described the load, the feeling of the weight at the top. We designed the head just a little bit heavier with the combination of the flex. When you get to the top and you know, you're in that top of swing position, you can really feel the weight of the head load. You know, you can feel that weight. And when you start your transition down, because the head is just a hair heavier and the flex of the shaft, what it does is it keeps the head at the top just a split second longer than you normally would. And what happens is when that head stays at the top, your wrist angles will start increasing as you come down. And really that's how you create the lag, is through wrist angles. And so by the head staying at the top, when you transition down, it literally forces you to keep your position patient in the swing. Most golfers, they get to the top and the first thing they do is they throw their arms down at the ball because they're trying to hit the ball instead of out at the target. So what the lag shot does is it keeps you patient in your swing. When you get to the top, you can't throw it down. You have to let your body motion come first and then the arms behind, and then that's how you'll create the lag, which will give you the solid contact and start hitting crisp solid iron shots. And so we've had a lot of good feedback. A lot of people are, you know, really benefiting from this club. And it's been an exciting journey. We didn't realize that it was going to make an impact in the golf industry like it has. But we're really, really excited about the potential and where we're going with this and how it's going to help a lot of golfers.
Gary, is this a tool you take to the golf course with you? I mean, do you just take it to the range, or is it at the range? Or is that something you stick in the bag with you?
I got a round.
Can you take it with you on the course itself and take a couple swings with it before you hit the ball?
Absolutely. So there's a few places where I practice with it. I have one out back of my house, so when I'm out there, I can just, you know, swing the club, stay smooth and relaxed, and get that nice tempo. I have it out back. I have one in my club or my bag. Mm-hmm. Always one in the bag. So when I get to the range, typically most golfers will, you know, warm up with a pitching wedge, maybe move to a 7-iron or something similar, maybe a driver, and then they go to the first tee box. My warm-up is a little different now. I grab the lag shot, so it's a little bit heavier, and I just kind of start loosening up with the lag shot. And then I'll start hitting balls with the lag shot, and then I'll go to my other clubs. When I get to the first tee box, you know, as we're waiting for our buddies to tee off, I have the lag shot in my hand, and I'm just clipping the grass. The good thing about this club, which differentiates it from others that are similar in the market, is the fact that we can hit balls with it. You know, when you're just practicing clipping the grass, you know, golfers, we always are swinging, clipping the grass. That's what we do when we're waiting, right? Well, now we can do it with the lag shot, and it really gives you the feeling of the lag, and you can kind of feel it. And then when you go to grab your club, it hopefully translates over to your club, which through the repetition and practice, it that's what it's meant to do. It's meant to ingrain the feels subconsciously into your swing, so you're not standing over the ball thinking of a thousand things. That's the worst place for a golfer to be is in their head standing over the ball. So what we want to do is eliminate all those swing thoughts and just make it a muscle memory thing that you can just continuously swing and get good at. Another good place where I like to use it is out in the middle of the fairway, you know, back nine. If I'm starting to struggle or falling apart, it's usually a tempo thing. It's usually a sequence thing for me. And so I have to get back into sequence. I got to get back into rhythm. And so I'll pull it out in the middle of a round and I'll just clip the grass and try to get back on track. And it really helps you in every aspect, whether you're warming up, whether you're practicing at the range, you know, during a round, trying to get back in sequence, whatever it is, the club is designed to give you the proper feel of what a swing is supposed to feel like on proper plane, in proper tempo. So you can't, you know, you grab it and just start swinging it. It does the job for you.
You know what I do, Gary, on the back? You know what I do on the back nine? I'm generally getting ready to press some. I have to press.
Yeah.
So I generally. Exactly. Yeah, that's what gets me off my game is the press. That's
well,
this will
get you back in it. Lagshotgolf.com is the website. We're going to give one of these bad boys away. It's a beautiful looking club, but as Gary just described, and Tom Gimble, who's an avid supporter of it, and apparently we're going to get one, but I'm going to try this thing out. I got to see how this works because those describe a lot of things that we all deal with, common mistakes, and you can't get into that tempo and into that rhythm either on the range or in a round. 12 swings can help you, and you explained very well how it does work because you can actually hit the golf ball with this club and feel how you're supposed to be doing it before you go back to your real clubs. Gary, we appreciate you. Tom Gimble, we appreciate you, and appreciate Gary jumping on. Lagshotgolf.com is the website. And coming back, we'll take a quick timeout. We'll give one of these away and tell you how you can be the winner of that Lagshot training tool. Tom, thanks. Gary, thanks. We'll be right back here
on BNN.
Thanks, guys. Thank you, guys.